we have what it takes to set up our own first black owned bridging firm in this country.
100%.
We have what it 100%. Takes to set up our own first black crowdfunding platforms.
100%.
Let's basically focus on property. If you're not growing, mm-hmm. you're dying. Mm-hmm. I think it's very important for all the audience listening to this. Like, let me say this again. If you're not growing as a person, you're literally dying.
Welcome, guys, to the Property Strategist Podcast. Again, you are here with your boy, Kenny. Who else is here?
Yeah, with your brother, Akin.
And we've got a very special guest with us, yes, okay? Yes, a very special... Yes. He's our personal uncle now, you know? he's our big bro, you know? We can't even call him... I mean, it feels weird to call you uncle because you're looking so young and fresh. You know what I mean? It must be the success.
It's the success. Right.
So anyway, without further ado, we've got Dr. Daniel Moses in the building.
Wow! Yep. Finally.
Finally,
you made it happen. We're in trouble, actually, guys.
Yeah, we're in trouble. Messed
up the first recording.
We messed up the first one, but you know.
We're back in the good books now.
Please, don't worry. Thanks for having me. You know, it's an honor. It's a pleasure.
Yes, and honestly, it's our honor as well because we've been following you for a while. This is meant to happen 100%. For a while, but your story alone is inspirational.
Yeah.
And where you are now and what you're doing now is amazing. So 100%. We just wanna. Really dive into
yes,
that.
And honor you here today.
And honor you here today.
Yeah. I think it's, this moment right now, it's one of those moments I just feel like 10, 20, 30 years, we're going to remember this time when we first sat and we met and, you know, all the progress that happened, you know, after this moment. So it's a timestamp in time and, yeah, everyone take it in and, you know, remember it. You know?
Wow.
All right.
But, Kenny, kick us off.
All right. So, yes, Dr. Daniel Moses, tell us about your background, okay? Yeah. Like, where it all started, you know? Yeah.
Wow. First of all, I'm so humbled to be here. Mm-hmm. And I just really want to open up my books. So this episode can really impact a lot of lives. Mm-hmm. I think before I even get into my background, I think one of the things I like to say is that in life, you will be knocked down mm-hmm. on the journey of becoming the greatest version of yourself. Yeah. Because it's not that we are going to a destination, it's the journey that is the destination. So the journey of you moving, just going through that process of discovering yourself to be the greatest version of yourself. Mm. So for me, it all began from Edo State. I'm from Edo State, Nigeria.
Come on.
I went to school, went to secondary school, primary school, went to university. From university, I always wanted to get out of Nigeria because being in Nigeria, you know, and being in the UK are two different things. For those of you that probably have grown here in the UK and growing in Africa, it's a different sort of, you know, level of being brought up. Mm-hmm. But for me, in Nigeria, where, for example, the government in itself, you know, has kind of failed the entire country, the nation, the youth and everything. Yeah. Yep. So you're almost put in the position whereby from who you become to what you earn, what you eat, what you drink, you are responsible for creating it for yourself. Mm. So, and that was the mindset that I grew up in. And as well as I was raised in a very decent family, reputable family back home. Although I am from a larger family because my late father was a traditional chief, wow. You know, like a duke, So he had 7 wives and I'm the 26th born of my late father.
Wow. Oh, wow.
So quite a large family. But my mom left my dad when I was literally 10 years old. Mm-hmm. So I was raised more by my mom, even though my dad comes in once in a while.
Yeah.
But my mom never remarried. Mm-hmm. So through that journey, going through school, you know, making up my mind to leave Nigeria when I needed to, because I just wanted to have the greater version of myself. But when I was in school, I was a cargo man. So cargo man means I sell anything, all right? So I sell, apart from drugs, right, or guns.
It's a clean platform, guys.
So I can sell anything. And not just only selling anything, I was a top shot in school. Mm. Because I was selling anything, I'll sell clothes, I'll sell cars, I'll sell anything. So people just knew me. Yeah. So any place I go to, people just knew me because I come with a lot of light and energy as well. Yeah. So for some reason, I think it's all clear to me now, regardless of all the journey I've been through in my life, because I naturally understand that, okay, how I was way back in university has actually reflected who I've become. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I've picked up so many things that everything. I'm 43 years old now. I'm going to be 43 next month. Yeah. All right. So
looking 33. Looking 30.
And everything just makes absolute sense now. Obviously my growing up has a lot to play in who I've become.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, whilst going through university and selling things and being well known in school, I just wanted to escape as well, because at some point in my life, you know, in school you have different groups of colors of people, you know, colors of gangs in school.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have the IEAs, we have the AEAs, we have the Buccaneers, we have all these different organizations which had positive impact and negative impact. But at some point, you know, growing up, being in university, I became one of those people as well. And the reason why I became one of those people, I was quite influential. You know, I sold anything sellable. Does that make sense? I had a good car. I spent 4 years in university. Every single year I changed my car. But because I was selling stuff, I was selling things, you know, the best people knew me on the best club. So I was living that great life. But towards the final year of my being in school, the people who I thought I had security with, because I'm part of this gang now, in the positive way, you know, not the negative way. There were gangs in this part where, for example, they were rugged. When I mean rugged, if you mess about with them, bro, they take you out. So I was part of them. And I've never really gone deep into sharing this, but I really thought I'd share this because I know your audience is kind of very young people as well. So towards the last part of me being in university, I was almost like at risk of losing my life. That if I did not leave, I could be killed. And not just that, my business, you know, selling things in Nigeria, in school, you know, was also having its own challenges. So at that point in time, I remember telling myself, I'm gonna go to America. Applied for American visa, I didn't get it. UK obviously gave me the visa, and I said, you know, I just come. So I came with the intention to visit. Right, let me see how it goes. I'll go back and go back to America. But imagine, first of all, I had no brother in this country.
How
old were you when you came, by the way? Just like, I was literally in my
20s. So when you finished university?
Yeah, I came here probably at the age of 22.
Still very young.
But no brother, no sister, no relative, nobody.
Wow. And like, did you leave with urgency because of the gang and because your life was at risk?
I had to leave because all these things was happening. You know, there was wars, you know, one color fighting the other, you know, and way back in those days, the biggest thing that causes the problem is, number one, is money. The number two is women. And whilst I was in school back in those days, I mean, I'm still good looking.
You're flying, right?
So I'm still good looking. Yeah. So imagine, like, girls everywhere. You know? So, and the reason why I became part of it at that time was because I was selling things. I always made money. People buy stuff from me, not pay me in time. So I needed to protect myself. That was number one.
Okay.
Number two, you know, girls was always around me. So because I was kind of a ladies' man, right? So I had to also protect myself because I don't want to be in a situation where I probably hit the wrong girl that's dating the wrong guy, then I could be killed and stuff like that. So that was the reason. All right. So that's just a little bit of story about me growing up.
Okay.
You know, and finally, basically, I just decided to, you know, get a visa, come to the UK and see how it goes.
Yeah.
If UK wasn't the place for me, maybe I'll go to America. But I always wanted to go to America.
Okay.
Because America, I had relatives in America. But the UK, I didn't really have a lot of relatives.
No one here, no auntie.
No auntie, no brothers. Everybody I met here basically were people who were from Edo State who became aunties and uncles. So there was never like blood relative. Right, no.
Right. So who was you staying with when you first came?
So when I first came, so I stayed with a family friend that I knew in Nigeria, that they had a brother living here. So his name was Osas. So, and that was the guy I lived with.
Okay.
So he was staying on HMO at that time. And as well as, you know, when I came, I didn't know that was an HMO. So he was sleeping in the bed, I sleep on the floor. So I stayed here. I spent about a couple of months. I really liked it, but I went back to Nigeria. It was when I got back to Nigeria, I was like, oh my days, you know, if I don't go back, this guy could kill me. I'm just going to go back to England. And that was just how I basically made up my mind.
Wow.
2005, came back, met my wife.
So you met her in
the UK? I met my wife in the bus.
In UK, yeah?
Yeah, in the UK. Wow. I met my wife and a boss.
You just moved
and after, yeah, I moved to her, you know, and...
Got the smooth.
Yeah, I moved, man. In Nigeria, when you see a girl you like, you move, man. And I moved to her, you know, she didn't give me the number the first time, but eventually we met, coincidentally, a second time. Mm. And I said, you missed me the first time, you didn't give me your number the first time. Mm. You have to give me your number now. Yeah. So when I came back, I found a reason to literally live in this country.
Okay.
And the reason was my wife.
Wow, that is beautiful.
And I proposed to her within 6 months of dating her, and we're married for 17 years.
Shout out to wife. And
shout
congrats.
To Mrs. wife.
17 years.
Behind the great man, there's always a great woman.
That's it.
And behind the great woman is a great man.
Facts. So thank you for that brief background. And then what's the background of how you got into Uber driving as well? Like, talk us through that journey.
Yeah, what was the transition from Uber driving to property as well?
Yeah
I mean, I came, like I said, I came to this country way back to you know, 2004. Mm. So getting here, did all sort of odd jobs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
For that, before 2015, I always wanted to go back and live in Africa. So I will break cars here in the UK into spare parts. Yeah. I will ship them back over to Nigeria. I'll go into Primark, I'll buy clothes. I'll ship them back as well to Nigeria. I'll sell, I make good profit. Mm. But after I got married, you know, I wanted to be more, you know, and I just wanted to be successful. But I discovered that was not going to take me to the level of success I wanted. So some reason I kind of just said, you know, let me go back home to Africa. And a lot of, at that time, I was becoming quite friendly with a lot of politicians and all these people. Yeah. Mm. So I got an invite that, oh, Dan, you know, you can do oil and gas in Nigeria, da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. So I went back to Nigeria. I was introduced by a very close friend into oil and gas logistics. Mm. And I started my oil and gas business. I started, you know, moving petroleum products. So I was the guy that would go to the depot, move the refined petroleum products, and then distribute it to the petrol station where it's sold to you and you for your cars. Yeah, wow. So oil and gas logistics. Yeah. So I was doing that.
And this was back
home. This was back in Nigeria. So okay. I started doing that when I moved back to Nigeria in 2012. So between 2012 and 2015, I was doing that. I was really, really going well. Yeah, it was good. I had a good life. Mm. So I'll travel back to Nigeria. I spent 3 months in Nigeria. I come back, I spent 1 month. I have two kids. Mm. All right. So I go back, come back to England. Yep. So most of my life I was spending in Nigeria.
Wow.
But in 2015, two of my trucks, literally with products, with petroleum products, 65,000 liters on the road, literally run into each other.
What?
And basically went into the valley, busted into flames. Oh. I lost over 150,000 pounds.
Crazy.
Same day.
Was that accident or was that planned?
And
how did you feel when that happened?
Yeah.
I was confused. I was just confused. Mm. And I remember not even knowing what to say, what to do. And I just felt like my life has ended.
Mm.
Because I've changed businesses every now and then as an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I always had this passion of being an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Even while I was doing odd jobs way back when I first came into the UK, and I literally found my feet later.
Mm.
I was doing all these different things. And for me, I thought I had settled for the oil and gas industry.
This was it.
I started to do something from 2012 all the way to 2015. And I really, you know, went quite quickly in achieving some good level of success. Mm. And all of a sudden, losing this money, losing the business. The good thing was that nobody died. You know, nobody died, but it was very challenging. I went into depression.
Mm.
You know, I went to big time depression. Mm. And I remember...
You're just doubting yourself, just doubting that you're supposed to be an entrepreneur.
The point was, how was I going to start again?
Mm.
You know, how was I going to start again? Like, literally, in my mind, I've sold cars, I've sold clothes, I've sold anything sellable apart from gun and drugs. Was entrepreneurship really for me?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So when that happened, I literally accepted to be a failure.
Mm.
At this time, I knew nothing about mentorship. I knew nothing about being able to speak your mind, how you feel in your business to someone else that probably had gone through things that I probably was going through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really understand how to navigate this because nobody taught me how to do any of these things.
Yeah,
I literally did my own research. Yeah. And I basically started doing it. Mm. So I went to serious depression. And I remember I'd go and see my GP when I came back to England. A couple of times, you know, the ambulance came to my house because I thought I was having a heart attack.
Mm.
And I remember one of them, I remember one of these days that, you know, the ambulance came, picked me up at 12 midnight, about 1 a.m. in the night. I got discharged in the following morning. I had consistent chest pain. I couldn't sleep. Wow. I had all different sort of issues just going all around. Mm-hmm. And I literally thought I was going to die. And then I started having some other issues that I cannot even explain. I started suffering with something called sleeping paralysis. Mm. I started suffering from, or you name it. I started suffering from all different kind of things.
And this was from the stress.
This was just business. All coming from the stress.
Wow.
And at the same time I was having this, I started to have marital issues with my wife.
Mm.
Because now my wife has seen me win. She's seen me being okay. She's also seen me fail a little bit once in a while. But I became a different person that she couldn't kind of understand or cope with.
Yeah.
Does that
you
make sense?
Talk about this stuff, you know, because when you're going through these trials and tribulations of being an entrepreneur, it's very lonely sometimes.
And you go through ups and downs.
So many ups and downs that you're, and if you've got a partner, they have to deal with that. You know what I say?
And for my wife, I was married to a British woman. You know, I was married to a woman that has never stayed and lived in Africa before. You know, I think one of my biggest resilience is the fact that I've been through all those different things in life. So like I said, I went through, once upon a time, being almost killed, being in a group of those kind of people I mentioned. And I sold everything. I've been envied and all these different things. I've been through the worst. If I was to go deep into the story I'm telling you guys right now, we're not going to leave here today. We're going to be here for the next couple of hours. I've been through all these different challenges in my life where I thought, am I going to die tomorrow or am I going to leave tomorrow? So when I lost that money and I had these issues where my wife is doubting me, is like a man who, I don't believe in the British system of how marriage works, whereby, for example, the wife has to bring 50%, the man brings 50%. I don't do that. I'm the man of my house. I'm responsible for my wife. I'm responsible for my kids. So I pay for everything. Does that make sense? Even though she had a job. So all of a sudden, I'm now in a place where I'm asking my wife for £5. I'm now in a place where my wife is asking, you know, we need to get this for the kids. I'm looking at my wife's eyes. So for me, it felt like I already failed. So, and all this,
it's like your manhood is gone. Like
all these different ripple effects started to happen in my marriage, that all of a sudden between me and my wife, it's like we've gone into this space in our life where there's hate. So I, you know, both of us just going through that hatred. Like, why are you even stressing yourself? Go and get a job. Which is the British normal. It's a normal thing. I've been an entrepreneur all my life. So the only thing I know all my life is entrepreneurship. The only thing I know in my life is how to be creative. If you take creativity out of me, like listen, it's almost like you've taken Dr. Danny Moses out. So I went through that. Then I remember coming back. I remember in 2015 when I came back and my wife asked me like, what next? I said, I don't know. And she said, okay, but something has to happen. You've got two young kids. What's going to happen? I said, okay, I'm going to get a job. And I ended up working with a delivery company. I started doing delivery. I did that for a couple of months. From doing the delivery, I went into driving Uber because someone told me about, okay, you can't keep doing, you know, delivery driving is not going to give you enough to take care of yourself and family. But as an Uber driver, you can make more money. So I went into driving Uber.
How was that? Because I'm trying to go through the psyche. Like you've done business, you've been successful at it. You know, you've got the kids now, so I guess you have to try to think more responsibly. But you're thinking, I know I'm an entrepreneur. Why am I driving an Uber?
I was making big bucks.
Yeah, was that your thinking, or was you just, it's fine, it's just a job for now?
You know, good question, by the way. When I was going through that challenges, this is where I found God. This is where I really found God. Because I started to enjoy it. I was enjoying especially the very first 6 months I started driving Uber. I really enjoyed it. I've never been put in that position in my life before where, you know, I felt like I was enjoying something now. And later, everything makes sense now because I wasn't enjoying it. What happened was I got comfortable. I thought stress and pressure has gone out of my life now. So all I just need to do, get a car, put a petrol, drive a few couple of hours around.
Yeah,
and then I get paid.
I get you mean.
So And I said, and I feel like, okay, yeah, that was the enjoyment. But but looking backwards, for me, it was like I accepted failure to the extreme. And I got comfortable. And that was the reason why I think it helped me out of being, you know, coming out of my depression, because it felt like therapy. Because I was driving 18 hours a day. Who in his normal mind? How many hours do you have in a day?
24.
24 hours.
So I was driving 18 hours a day. So you see where it was like I was enjoying it. I was using it as a therapy, but at the same time, I was killing myself. So I'm going through this Uber driving thing. I found God. Because I go to church, I start to pray. And I'm like, God, is this the end of my life? But anyway, it's not. Thank you. I got this Uber driver. I can pay my mortgage. I can pay the wife's expenses. Yeah, maybe if we can go holiday, maybe. So that was the mindset. That was just the mindset. But what started to get me back to myself?
That's what
I would go to church. My pastor would... You know, my spiritual father, Apostle A.T.B. Williams, is one of the most genuine pastors out there. And he when he preaches, like, don't let your downturn be what you settle for all the time. So I started to repray and like, God, I need to get out of this. I think I know I got more. I know I can do more. And I kept praying. I remember this particular day I was coming back from Gatwick Airport. And this was around about 2016, towards around, if I'm right, around about October 2016. And I fell asleep on the wheel. I was about to crash into the bush. I was already on the hatch of the lane.
Oh, wow.
Because I was driving long hours.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're killing yourself, literally.
I was killing myself. I remember falling asleep and then all of a sudden I heard a voice, wake up! And I literally waked up, you know, jumped up, and I kind of... Yeah. Control the stereo off the wheel, and I brought the car back to the road, and then I heard another voice, pull over at the petrol station, you need a rest. And I went to the petrol station and I slept and I had a nap. It was in that nap, it's in my book, The Rent-to-Rent Made Easy, How to Get Side in Property with Little or No Money, the book I wrote, the very first page of it, I talked about the story there. It was in that particular, I fell asleep in that nap. In that nap, the Holy Spirit showed me the industry I'm in today.
Wow.
And that is how the birth of my property journey started. I woke up from that sleep. I was about to pick up the next ride to come to town. Because with Uber, they have an app. On the Uber app, you can literally set your destination. I don't know if they still do it now. But you can set your destination to go home. And it will only give you rides towards your direction. So I was about to set the direction of where I'm going to so I can get that. Something said to me, go to Facebook. And I went into Facebook, and whilst I was in Facebook, an ad popped up, all right, by guy who was doing something at that time, and it was a networking event, and the networking event was £70. From the £70, to be honest, it was the exact amount I had left in my credit card, Vanquish, and my credit limit was £150. And I literally said, you know what, I'm going to do it. Everything that just happened to me right now feels like it's unreal. I'm just gonna do it. I paid £70. This was on a Wednesday. On a Friday evening, I was in that networking event, and I got into that room. I was the only black man in that room. First of all, I felt
2016
felt awkward. I'm like, what is this? But remember, let me quickly say something backwards very quickly. Before 2016, I was in this just African community bubble. Pandediam, you eat rice, you go to Nigerian party, you go to church. It was just that bubble of, you know, African community doing the same thing over and over and over and over again. Insanity. Right? And I remember being in that room, and I'm the only guy that's black, and they're talking about property, they're talking about rent to rent, they're talking about lease option, they're talking about all these different property strategy. I'm like, oh my days, do I even belong here? So I convinced myself I don't belong here, and I remember going to church on a Sunday, and I shared this story with a brethren, and the guy said to me, Daniel Moses. You know, he said, you're not a tire, which means aren't you tired? you just lost money. It's not even up to 2 years. You're now also talking about entrepreneurship again.
I don't like that kind of conversation.
Yeah. So funny enough, I didn't listen to him because
it's good you didn't listen to him.
I didn't listen to him. The following week, I was back into doing all different types of networking, that was where the investment into my education started.
Okay.
Well, you know what? Can we just pause for a second? Because you've said a lot.
Yes.
And it's been very inspirational. I just want to say, I didn't think, that's the first time we've heard of someone getting into property or a networking event in that way. You know what I mean? Through a real, true encounter with God, you know, from almost losing your life a few times, but this time on the road, doing the work that you were doing in that comfort and almost losing your life, to hear that from God and then to be where you are now. It's just an amazing story of how you got into, you know, rent to rent. But I just wanted to pause on that and then, where we are now. So how did you get into rent to rent? Like, tell us about, you know, your first deals. Like, how did it fit? Because this is a new area for you. These are new people you've never seen before. How did you get your first deal now? How did that come about?
So this is the thing, right? This is where, you know, getting into the first deal didn't just come into getting the first deal. I had to get myself educated.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into paying for seminars and I became a hard networker. Between 2016 to 2008, you name me, any networking event in London, I was there.
I was networking hard.
I was going through mentorship. Then from there, I invested with my second mentor, Carl Hutchins. I went through to Carl Hutchins. Carl Hutchins taught me how to do rent to rent. From Carl Hutchins, I went to Kevin Green. From Kevin Green to another of my business mentor. But let's go back to the rent to rent. So I went to another event, then Carl Hutchins, you know, sold me his course, paid for his course, went through that course. To be honest, I'm still one of his most successful students. At that time till today, how many years later? 6-7 years later, I'm still one of his biggest success.
From when you've been selling from back in the day, like, you know what I'm saying?
You know, and that's, I think this is the second time I've actually mentioned his name now on the podcast. Yeah, so he taught me everything I knew. And this is where my creativity has, because this is you can't take the bush. You can take the man, you can try and take the bush out of the man, but you can't. You can try to pull a bush out of a man, but you can't take the bush out of him, something like that. Or, you know,
you take the man out of the bush, but you can't take the bush out of the man.
So I'll use that in that context. So the bush is me being creative here. So creativity, you can't take it out of me.
It's just, you know, who you
it
are.
Was just who I am. So now everything makes sense. So many years ago, over the last 5 years, so because what I've actually been doing, I have been going back to look at my life. So over the last, especially last year, I went backward to the age of 16. I went back to look at my life all the way from the age of, from between now to the age of 16. So I started to see how my past has shaping me to who I have become. So now looking at everything now, 2023, and I know what my purpose is truly, completely. So looking at rent to rent, when I then started to do the coaching and the mentorship, I found my first deal. So when I found my first deal, I needed to fund it by like about £7,000. So I found the deal. I didn't have the money. So I sold it.
So you sourced it out.
That's it.
So I sold it. So when I sold it, I made £1,850 or so. So when I sold it, I found another one. I sold it. I made another £1,850. I was like, boy,
this is crazy.
I was like, this is...
You're making money now.
I said, so a couple of hours on Rightmove and then gave it to somebody else that wanted a deal. I just made £1,850 like that. I'm like, Uber. I wrote the date down.
It's okay.
So now this is 2017, I wrote the date down. I was like, September 2018, I'm not going to drive you anymore. I'm going to be driving this car. I literally visualize what I'm going to do. So
I like that.
I sold two deals. Now I have almost £4,000.
Yep.
At that time, Vanquish credit card has increased my limit from 150 to around about £1,000+. Then I had applied again for Capital One. Capital One then gave me about £2,000 limit. So when I have the two, I got the third D now. I put the 4K together, and then I whacked my credit card on it. That was my first rent.
Wow.
Rent.
Wow.
And now,
humble beginnings.
Let me even say this
real
to you.
Humble beginnings.
Let me say this to you. So when I secured my first rent-to-rent deal, now I put my credit card, I put the money that's coming from the deal, I've secured it. After securing the deal, I went back home, I told my wife, I said, baby, we're going to be rich now. I just secured my first rent-to-rent deal. This property, I'm going to make £600 profit every single month. Then my wife looked at me, she's like, you went to rent a property.
Hey.
What if tenant does not rent it on the room by room? Me, I've not seen where people actually rent property on a room by room basis. I'm like, well, you know, I've been doing this training. It's going to work. She's like, okay, but if it doesn't work, you now have a problem of about £2,000 rent you need to pay to another landlord. Plus, we have our mortgage to pay. We have our council tax to pay. We have water bill to pay. Where's that going to come from? Bro, I panicked. And I literally picked up the phone, called the lettings agent I actually was going to give them the keys back. That, unfortunately, I made a mistake. I spoke to someone. Someone had told me there's a 14-day clause on the contract. I should go and read it. That by law, if you break from 14 days, at that time, I didn't know that 14 days, you can pull out of a tenancy.
Okay.
So I actually went on this particular law, common law tenancy. It was actually there on that clause.
Okay.
I went back to Letty's agent. I was like, And then they said, they go speak to their manager, XYZ, but I'm going to lose all my money and everything else. I was like, I don't care, you know. I remember they said they'll call me back the next day. So they called me back the next day. I didn't pick. I was driving Uber. And I tried calling them back. All right. And the manager was not available. I just said, you know what? Let's give it a shot. Now, the first week passed.
Hey, no tenant.
No tenant.
Hey, 7 days left.
The second week passed.
Hey.
No tenant.
Hey.
Now, you can imagine that feeling. So I'm like, I've got my taxi problem. I need to drive more Uber. Now, I need to even increase from 18 hours to 20 hours just to just...
No sleep. Just forget sleep now.
So I just kept banging. To lo and behold, the 16th day.
Wow.
16th day, my first and I secure the property.
Wow.
Pay, that time, you can take fees from tenants. I took my fees. To be honest, I've never said this on any podcast. I'm going to give it
I know
again.
What you're going to say.
I actually charged the tenant that time. I charged them, the fee I charged them was even more. I charged them what? The fee at the time, you're only allowed to charge referencing fee. So me, I just came out, I just charged £500. They just paid it anyway because they were international students.
Oh, so they have money. So it's like,
I charged £500. They paid me. Yeah. Then I did the reference and everything else. Then they paid all the fees and everything.
You know, you don't even care whoever you are. Just take the room.
I said, I said, I will give you the room, but as long as, you know, you pay me £500. She's like, no problem. I said, but the rule, I can only take 1 week, but I'm charging £250 extra from whatever that 1 week rent is because of this. I explained to them. And she's like, don't worry. I can even, she even ended up giving me drink on the 500.
Wow.
So I ended up making about 750 in total. Wow. She was very nice and everything. I was like, your referencing fee is meant to be 250. She said, listen, I've spoken to so many agents. Nobody gave me a room. So instantly I made £500 plus referencing fee, 750. The month rent was due. All right. So before I knew everything, I had 750. Then she called in another of her friend. I made the same 750. My first month's rent was paid.
Wow.
By the end of that month, I got my, it was a four bedroom rent to rent.
Yeah.
I got the whole thing tenanted.
Perfect.
That's amazing.
And I'm like, oh my days. It worked. Then I panicked.
What location was this as well?
South London.
Hey. Cool. Yeah.
And that was just the real story of how I did my first thing.
That's an amazing story. And I just want to go through some of that. Like, what I noticed is that you had one mentor that you paid for, and then you paid again for another one and another one. This is something that we always encourage people to do. Go out there and pay. You can find this stuff for free. It may take you a long time to get there if you're trying to do it for free and try and be cheap about it. But I'm saying, there are people out there who are way ahead of you who can save you time and effort. If you just go to them and just you know, free this money up. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, so the fact is, you didn't get discouraged from maybe just the one and think, okay, I'm only going to stick with him. You were like, okay, I've got that information. Let me keep going. Mm. I just love the fact that you were taking in information. Mm. You're willing to learn. You're willing to pay for your learning.
Yeah.
And then look where you are now, like that. Yeah. And this is the beauty of it. It gives you that confidence.
It
kind of gives you that confidence when you have all of this information, when you have all this learning, because when you're hit with these questions, when people are questioning, you're thinking, okay, but it does work. The model does work, you know. Yeah. So
Daniel, I want to go from the rent-to-rent deal to how you got into raising finance and doing some of these bigger deals as well. I know you would have picked up a few rent-to-rents along the way, but what was that transition like? And then how did you end up getting to a place where you're raising finance, doing BRRR deals, et cetera? That's what you're kind of known for now.
So again, it's all down to education, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if you're not growing, you're dying.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very important for all the audience listening to this. Like, let me say this again. If you're not growing as a person, you're literally dying.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say if you're not growing, you're dying, a lot of people get one mentor. They go one course. It's like, yeah, I've been doing courses and that's it. Right? Look at iPhone. Every now and then you get a notification to upgrade your software. And then when you upgrade your software, it basically shuts down and there's a reset. All right? Why do you think Apple does that?
Just to keep you using the product, isn't it?
So that it keeps that product active or that device active. So they send you a signal to upgrade it. Because if you don't upgrade it, probably it's going to have, you know, issues and all of these things. So for me, how did I transition from rent to rent into basically acquiring my own properties was very simple. I started to invest more. So after quitting my Uber driving job in 2018 and I bought my NASCAR, I went back home to tell my wife and said, you know, I think this is working. At that time, we had I had about 15 properties in my portfolio. So I said to my wife, the house that we live in now, you know, I've just paid for this course. I've just finished this mentorship program. And my mentor said, actually, that I can take a second charge from this current home because of what is worth at the minute. So at that time, our house that we live in was worth £430,000. Mm. Our standing mortgage was £220,000.
Mm.
So my mentor said, okay, if you're looking for money to buy a house, you can buy a house in Kent somewhere, and you can take on a second charge against your current home to buy an investment property. But I then looked at it and said, actually, why don't I basically move out of that house and go move into a rented house? And I did the maths. So when I did the maths, so we could have rented another house for like £1,500 for me, my wife, and my kids to stay and make about £2,500 profit. So if £2,500 profit from the asset pays our rent and our cost of £2,000, I still have £500 profit. So that was the mentality there. So when I looked at it, I was like, oh, this makes sense. So I then went on a 6-month journey selling this package to my wife. Like, oh, baby, you know, we've got to do this. We've got to do this. And my wife, I remember the first time I went to speak to my wife about this. She's like, have you lost your mind? What is going on? I don't think I know you anymore. And I kept selling it. So eventually she agreed. So once she agreed, you know, there's a way God positioned for me, I don't think it's because of any other thing, but I think God has created a path for me. It's because everything makes sense to me now. I basically was looking for a house to rent so me and my wife can move to. Then I found a house that was for rent and for sale. And the property had been on the market for like a year. I then done a delayed completion on that property and we moved into that house. It was not quite the best of the houses. It was quite run down. So we moved into that house. And then we turned our existing home into a 6-bedroom HMO. Then I raised the money for the refurb. It cost me £153,000 to do the refurb. And it cost me about £20,000 in interest and fees. So we're looking at about £173,000 here. So because I was actively network and being one of the networker in my mentor's network, I found a builder in my mentor's network. And I sold myself to him. All right. And obviously I documented, literally, if I'm very right, if you go back and look at my entire social media and scroll all the way backward, I've documented my journey to the point that I am now, right? So
that's a big key.
I basically, the guy looked at me on social media, oh, I see you're doing rent to rent, is your first, okay, I'm happy to support you. So the guy accepts for me to pay him 50% of, you know, instrumentally throughout the lifetime of the project. That was me, the first part of raising money. Then my rent to rent business was doing great. So I had taken expansion, business expansion loan of about £50,000. I got some other credit cards. All right. And I took another loan. So on a nutshell, I had raised the money that I needed to fund the cost of the project. That is exactly how I funded my first project. So I turned my my family home into an HMO, moved out into a house that I bought with delayed completion. And then when the property was completely done, the outstanding mortgage on that house was 220, remember? The value was 430. Once it's completed, it was now worth 720,000 pounds.
There you go. Wow.
So 85% debt on it. So what I did an 85% loan to value mortgage on it. Put out all my money out.
Wow.
All right. Now, I bought the second property. And I bought the third property.
Okay.
Wow.
So I bought the second property and I bought the third property within that same year.
Wow.
One was delayed. One was instant. Right? Now I have three properties that I own.
Wow.
So what do I do? Shout, talk about it on social media. Yeah.
You literally created wealth.
When I see you, I talk about... I notice the successful people talk about themselves.
Yeah.
The reason why they talk about themselves is not because they're stupid people or they're mad people. You have to be obsessed with yourself. If you don't, if I don't talk about me for people to believe in me, how else are they going to give me money? If I can't show you what I'm doing and show you facts and figures of what I'm doing, how are you going
to
support me?
You need to see the projects. You need to see
people. I think people just have to understand this thing comes... Raising finance is not rocket science, but you've got to be knowledgeable.
Yeah.
Actually, I have a wealth structure formula which I created at Property Wealth Education. It's called the wealth formula. All right, the wealth circle formula is basically get knowledge, have a plan, all right, take action, raise finance, build assets, and go over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So I shared my knowledge, not in a way of me trying to be a mentor or whatsoever the case might be. It was for me telling people why they should borrow me money.
To promote yourself.
Yeah.
Now, I became not afraid or shy to say I'm a borrower. Like, have you got 50 grand for me there? Have you got 200 grand for
that's
me there?
Key in our
community. I started to sing about it.
Yeah. Tell them about it. Yeah. No, because in our community, you have to feel like you shouldn't be asking like that.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to. It makes you feel like and look like you're
Yeah, weird. And just before you do that as well, I noticed that, off camera, we were actually saying that, you know, sometimes we're programmed to think more about the risk of things than actually the wealth of it and what can come from it. And I noticed that you were saying you were raising finance this way, that way, that way. And, you know, I'm realizing that some people might hear that and think, oh, I can't do that. I'm scared. What if it all falls through? Yeah. What if this? But you had a plan.
Yeah.
You know what
the
mean?
Thing is, we've been accustomed to thinking small.
Mm.
We're accustomed to thinking small. We're accustomed to thinking safe.
Mm.
So everything is about security.
Yeah.
Right? Everything is about security. In as much as I appreciate the fact that everybody's got to be secured, right? I drove all the way from Bromley to Datford to do this podcast recording. God forbid, anything could happen. So someone can have an accident and die, right? But the fact is, you have to understand this. It is how you propose to yourself of what you become. The words of our mouth are powerful. How we process things are powerful. This is one of the things I learned from as a man thinketh, all right? Even the Bible says, as a man thinketh, so he is, right? So in order for you to borrow money from someone, first of all, you've got to have the step-by-step knowledge and evidence and facts and figures and all of these things, right? And as well as not being shy of promoting what you truly believe in. Elon Musk believed that he could take, you know, the rocket all the way to the sky. And he kept doing it, kept doing it, kept doing it. Four times he failed. But today, he has success. Okay, paper, right? Jeff Bezos, all these different people, they just believed in something. And then they went for it. So for me, I just believed that, okay, I mean, I was an Uber driver and I lost everything. In fact, got to a point where I thought I would never make it. And I got comfortable. But I had to rewire my brain. And when I rewired my brain, my mental was that I'm going to go and get people to believe in me and trust in me, and I'm going to go and build a name for myself. And the name I am building, or rather the name I've built now, has now given me so much credibility because I have facts, I have figures. I can take you to a whole road in Bromley where I can take you from on the street, I can take you into four of my buildings.
Mm. Wow.
Right, I can take you into four of my buildings. So if I show my investor that and I'm like, I'm taking this money so I can do more. Yeah. So it's no longer be like I'm begging them.
Yeah, they want to be part of your project.
They want to now be part of me.
Yeah.
And I'm telling them I want to build a £100 million property portfolio in the next XYZ years.
Yeah.
And I'm telling them why they need to be part of this.
So, Daniel, I want to get into like the last part is about your program, because I think your program is one that's different to all the other programs out there, to be honest.
Oh, really?
You know, a lot of them focus on property, but a lot of them are focused on property, but not many of them actually focus on wealth and wealth building and the mindset around that. So just quickly, I want you to let people know about the program, but also why should people be a part of it, you know, and be part of your journey?
I think over the years, I've also, again, like I said, in 2023, I'm literally going back to, I've basically gone back to looking at everything I've done. Honestly, people think property gets you wealth and success. No, it's not property that gives you wealth and success. It's the creativity that gives you success.
Yeah.
I've seen people, actually, I know someone that owns 20 properties and is still dead broke. Right? Because he's paying off his mortgage. His mindset is he wants to own 20 properties cash. Right? Now, when you die, you're going to pass £20,000 worth of an asset that has no mortgage to your children. If he's not structured correctly, your children is going to be whacked up by a heavy inheritance tax bill. But if you have sense, and if you have wisdom, and if you're smart, successful people build on leverage. And if you look at wealth creation in itself, no one has ever created wealth with the savings that they made or the savings that they got from their 9-to-5 job. Success is built on leverage. Success is built on debt. So you have to understand the difference between bad debt and good debt. Now, 2006, I bought my first house with my wife that we lived in. If I knew the power of leveraging, that I can come to you and I can say, give me £100,000. I'm going to give you 10% return on that. That's £10,000 of £100,000. So if I'm giving your money back, it's £110,000. If I knew that in 2006 and I bought five properties, remember I said the property in 2019 was worth £430,000. How much equity would I have created? £250,000, for example, times five. That is how much? £2 million. If I'm right with my numbers, right? Five properties,
million,
right?
Over a million pounds.
Over a million pounds. Over almost £2 million, right? Now, look at that for 1 minute. But in 2006, nobody showed me I could leverage with people that's got money in the bank so they can work with myself so I can create assets with them. So for me, the reason why I'm passionate about wealth is that I'm trying to deconstruct people using debt the right way rather than the wrong way. So some people will have credit cards now and will go on holiday on that credit card. That is a depreciating value. But if you had a credit card that is £60,000, and people do have credit cards that are £60,000, there are ways you can use that as a leverage against, you know, maybe paying for your refurbishment or paying for what such not. But in the end, if you refinance that property is going to pay off that credit card. All right, so the wealth formula is that you leverage your own asset that produces cash for you to create even more leverage through security, through second charges, all right, through offering your investor different security options. So for me, I tell people how you create wealth through property is not just buying an asset and you're paying down the mortgage, but it's about you buying assets that is cash producing as a business model. People buy houses for the sake of buying houses. I buy houses that produces me cash flow. So a simple example is I raised about £300,000 to buy a property doing a refurb. I paid the investors back. The same property now produces £70,000 a year, gross rental income.
Facts.
I paid the investors back. I own the asset for free. The property produces £70,000 a year gross income. That's wealth creation.
That's creation.
Leverage. Assets,
amazing.
Security, cash flow.
Amazing.
That's free game.
That section alone, guys, take that, save it somewhere.
Yeah.
We'll go there. But just for the last section, Daniel, I know we spoke off air as well. about the community and coming together. What's your dream for this community coming together finally? You're saying about the Black Revolution.
Yeah.
Is it happening? What's happening?
Honestly, I recently done an interview with I think it was last year at the, you know, Her Royal Majesty's Jubilee. Yeah. And I was interviewed by Success CEO, I think, I can't even remember the name of the article now. Mm. So I was one of the UK's top CEO magazines. Yeah. So I was interviewed by them, and they asked me a question. How do you think in the community and in a real estate is dominated by the white people? Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right? Because obviously we're in their country, whether you're born here or not, we're in that country. Yeah. But they then asked me a question: how do you aim to thrive as a diverse individual? They asked me that question, and I actually explained it quite well. And I said, the way we can come together is, number one, is to come together as a community. The Asians do it a lot. And the first way the Asians do this is five friends can actually choose to go and buy one house with five incomes. So for example, three of us here now can actually bring £100,000 together. Yeah. And we can buy one house per year. And then at the end of that 3 years, we all own three houses. Yeah. And that case ends there. So you live there, you're married with your kids, you're married with your kids. They do it a lot. Yeah. But on a larger scale, we can also revolutionize that and do that as Black people. Mm. But the problem is always that we sometimes feel that we need to be better than the other person. Yeah. When we're better than the other person, we need to show off to them that we're more. So we don't want to actually open our mouth, right? Yeah, yeah. But good thing is, you guys have this podcast and you're bringing a lot of people here to come and share this to the minority of people who are listening, who are from the ethnic minority, right? Mm-hmm. Now, on the outer space of us all coming together, so, you know, Property Site is quite a large, you know, podcast with massive audience. Yeah. My podcast, Wealth and Business Podcast, is also have that sort of reach as well, right? Yeah. Now, let's say, for example, we're not in competition, because 100%. You already showed that we don't have that mindset, because if we had that competition mindset, you wouldn't bring me on your podcast. Of course. Yeah. Other people were doing property as coaches and mentors. Okay, no problem. I had my last Wealth and Business Networking event. Somehow, the Who Is Who in London was there. But a few people didn't come. The ones that didn't come, no problem. All right? But the ones that came, fine. Imagine the Black Business Show. All right? Mm. It's called the Black Business Show. Yeah. All right? Okay. Imagine the Black Property Show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's got all this powerhouse, all diverse together. Mm. And let's show people how to create wealth. But the problem that we have is that could take a bit longer for us to come together, because of somehow some of us might feel like, oh, I'm a bit more than the other person. Mm. Does that make sense? But if we all can actually come together, right, and literally show people that you guys have done it, I'm doing it. The guy that owns this building, what's his name now?
Sammy.
If all of us come together and actually put on a show together, like, listen, we have what it takes to literally build our own economy that this country don't have to show even knife crimes anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because now they start to talk about Black entrepreneurs who are making wave in the property industry.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that is what I'm about. Yeah. I'm about, God willing, that it will happen in my lifetime, that by the grace of God, we will come out as Blacks and we will be mentioned in this industry that we are making a wave. And that is how we can change the trajectory. Does that make sense? That's how we can change it. Because until that happened, we're not gonna go anywhere. So for those who are listening, who are big players in the game, listen,
let's come together.
Let's be in a room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And not just content wise. I mean, guys, we've got a lot coming for you. So seriously, watch out. But project wise as well, you know, coming together, funding projects together, doing stuff together.
That's the dream.
There's a lot of people, a lot of things we'll be talking and going to be seeing soon.
Yeah. Funny enough, you talk about that. I have a mission, and I've said to myself, at some point, I want to come together with a lot of us.
Yeah.
We have what it takes to set up our own first Black-owned bridging firm in this country.
100%.
Yeah. We have what it takes to set up our own first Black crowdfunding platforms.
100%.
100%. That's basically focused on that property.
100%.
And we have what it takes. That. We have what it takes. We have all the knowledge now to do it.
And the reach.
We have the reach as well.
Mm-hmm.
Especially now within the Black community, where you have a lot of people. When I first came to this country, the only thing I knew any Black people do was you know, cleaning job. 20 years ago, it's cleaning job. Now we have people who are doing IT consultant, making £600-700 a month. A day. £500-600 a day to making £15,000 in their professional career. Yeah. So we can reach out to those people to be part of the system. Pile in and go and do more property projects.
Mm-hmm.
England currently has shortage of, you know, homes that we need to build at least over 140,000 homes affordable every single year.
100%.
So we can actually bridge that gap.
Yeah. Thank you. Guys, I just want to thank you. Daniel, thank you so much for coming through in this interview. I mean, like I said, this thing was more of a just introduction, you know, to this partnership, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's not just an interview. This is a partnership that we're bringing here. Your story is just, it's amazing. I thank you for going deep, because you could have just gone service level, to be honest.
Yeah.
But you really came to show that you're just human. You know what I mean? You're not anything special. You're not made of magic.
Nah.
And everything has come from, you know, a mindset, a determination.
Humble beginnings.
And, you know, I feel like, you know, that your mission and your vision, you know, it's going to come to pass. And, you know, I think the bridging the gap between some of our generations, I think, is where the challenge is sometimes. Maybe some people, even from our culture, when you're old, we're not going to work with you guys, or I want to be the big shot. But, you know, one thing I sense from you is just a humbleness, you know, and just want, you know, the need to help people, the next generation and things like that. So, yeah, I'm really excited for what's going to come next. Like I said, guys, this is just the first of this.
This is just the first of this
partnership. You
know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So we've got a lot of plans. But your event as well. Let them know about your event.
Yeah.
And I also want to, you know.
Fantastic. I run the Wealth and Business Networking event in London. So it's every quarter, every 3 months, and it's the last Monday of every quarter. Our home where we organize this event is Bromley FC, Bromley Football Ground. Yeah. So if you want to connect with high net worth individuals, people who basically went from grass to grace, from ordinary to extraordinary, you want to come and network,
100%.
You know, with us and to collaborate, to build. You know, I always say this, right? Focus on owning a percentage of something. Don't focus on owning 100% of nothing. Because if you can focus on finding a little bit of someone that can give you 10% of something that they already own, you can create more wealth. So Property Wealth is one of the place where I teach people how to do this. And I speak a lot about this in that Wealth and Networking event. So come and see us and go out, check out our website. Yeah. It's www.propertywe.co.uk, and you can get yourself registered on the next one. The next one is actually the 27th of February, 2023.
And where can they find you online as well?
Instagram. Yeah. So check me out on Instagram, Dr. Daniel Moses. So dr.daniel.moses. Guys, there's also a lot of fake ones, so be very short.
He's very famous now, so.
actually, someone got scammed for £8,000. This is why I'm really, really.
Please.
When you follow me, just drop me a DM. Normally, I'm not in my DM always. Yeah. My assistant will always just say hello back to you, so you know he's the right one. Yeah. All right. And Malika is her name. So just that you know as well. So okay. That's not the fake one.
Okay.
Because a lot of people, I don't want people DMing the wrong account and then getting scammed. So just thought I'd say that.
Yeah. But yeah, once again, thank you so much for coming through, bro. Stay tuned, guys. We've got a lot of plans with Daniel, so stay tuned. Any last words, bro?
No, I'm just kind of gassed from this interview now. I just want to go away and just go and start doing something.
But yeah, thank you so much. Stay blessed, stay invested.